Blog Talk Radio.
Dale Potts Jr. and my boy Phoenix, all the way from Las Vegas. And thank you so much, guys, for tuning in to This Is It. This Is It. How you doing, Phoenix?
Oh, I'm great, man. In the sunny city, as you mentioned, of Las Vegas. Las Vegas, Las Wages.
Las Wages.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I once heard from a gentleman. He says, who do you think pays for all the casinos and all the beautiful things in Las Vegas? And I was stumped. I was literally thinking, he says, the losers.
Oh, my God.
So that's
unbelievable.
The city of lost wages.
The city of lost wages. Crazy,
not everybody,
crazy.
You got to love it.
Hey. Well, man, I am so happy to be here with you today. And how was your holiday, by the way? Did you have a good one? You enjoy?
Well, you know what? I'm like you, bro. I put one foot in front of the other, like Jeremiah says, and I'm privileged to do so. I don't necessarily need a holiday to make me feel good. It's the people around me. Today's a holiday. I give Thanksgiving to be with you, my brother, and the listeners on the radio show. You know,
amen,
these are things that I relish personally.
I love it. Well, man, I'm so excited about the topic that we're talking about
Me
today.
Too.
I've been dealing with this in my heart all morning, and I had to run and do some chaplain work this morning and for some people, or an individual and his family, and it was awesome. And I think that, you know, it stimulated something else in me as well when it came down to the topic, when we talk about our animals, our pets, the little ones who love us and unconditionally, and it's just a beautiful thing. So I want to go ahead on this and let you kick us off into this love affair that's happening between human beings and our pets. Animals.
Yeah, I think it's an extremely warranted discussion. Like yourself too, I did some background research on the matter, and surprisingly, I came out with more than I went into. I came across some varied things that I think, if we walk away from this discussion about the intimate connection with our pets, and we really underscore why we feel this connection. And what is it that we feel is missing that they give us? then maybe, just maybe, this could help us to contribute to a fuller experience with our human loved ones. There are a lot of things about animals that they do unreservedly that unfortunately sometimes as humans we don't get that memo until something drastic happens. So I'm really looking forward to discussing some of those things. Obviously, their unconditional love, our need to be intimately connected with these animals, particularly post-COVID, if there's such a thing as post-COVID. You know, we really, I mean, the animal shelters are overwhelmed with people by the thousands groving towards getting a pet. So let's talk about it.
Yes, yes. Well, you know, I have to say that, you know, and I just want to give some of you guys just a small example of this, the power that I've watched and experienced. And I'll start, I'm going to start first with my childhood. When I was just a little boy, I think I was probably around 6 or 7. My dad was in love with, you know, dogs. He always had dogs, and he would bring dogs. He had the dogs working for him at his different stores, and then we had a dog or two at the house. And so, but most of the time, we would just, the dogs that were working for him would come to the house, and it would go back and forth. And so, but then he got me this little tiny puppy. And the puppy was so cute, and I was like, I can really have him? I can have him. And he's like, yeah. And I was so excited because I felt like I had something that needed me that was mine. And I was, like I said, I was only like 6 or 7. And it was very red, like red nose, everything, just, and hair was red, everything. So I named him Red. And so I fell in love with Red. So he was my project. He was my child, so to speak. And I remember going up and just going, and he would need me. He was always looking for me. And when he see me, his little tail would go so fast. And he's so happy to see me. And I would just get the opportunity to just, like, oh, my God. I just felt something special. That would do it. And this was only, like I said, at 6 or 7. I'm just a child. And I'm having this experience of love, unconditional love between me and this puppy. This puppy is teaching me what it means to love. It's just, you know what I'm saying? This is like, whoa. And so I remember going to school and then having to hurry up and get home because I wanted to make sure my puppy had the drink, had something to eat, and, you know, and was happy. And so unfortunately, it was probably about 2 months later, my mom, God bless her soul, was cleaning the basement where I kept my puppy. And when she, after she cleaned the basement, the dog was upstairs with me, and then it was time for him to go to bed, and my time for me to go to bed, actually. And so then I took him downstairs in the basement, and I put him in this little box, and I said, I'll see you tomorrow. And I went to bed. And then I got awakened at about, I don't know what time it was, but I got awakened. And when it was my mom, and she was crying. I said, what's the matter, Mom? And she says, you need to come and see this. And I said, see, what are you, okay. And I got up, I had no idea. I had no idea what you do. I had no idea what was going on. I went downstairs and my puppy was on the step, trying to come up the basement steps. And I said, "Well, come on, Ray, come on, come on!" But he couldn't. He wasn't moving. He was just laying on the step. And so then I went down to get him. And he was hard as a rock. And I started screaming. I was devastated. I was tore up from the inside out. I was just done. And then my mom was crying. Everybody was crying. It was just a mess. And I was miserable. I wouldn't do anything for a week. I just stayed in my room. I didn't want to talk to nobody. I was so upset, so hurt. But This is the kind of impact that these animals, our pets, have on us, because they do teach us that feeling of unconditional love. And it is a beautiful thing. They show us. They show us. That, you know, I heard this thing where the stranded dog went to his master and said to the master, "Master, can you tell me that story again, how you rescued me? Can you just share that story with me again on how you rescued me?" And the master says, "Oh, sure." He says, "But the real truth is you rescued me." And I was thinking, that's so good. That is so good, because we learn something from these amazing creatures that God has given us. And I just feel so blessed. And so still to this day, that little dog is my guy. He's still my guy. I use his name in certain things that, you know, so because he loved me that way, because he cared about me.
I'm glad you laid that foundation, because we're on two minds with that. You know, the correlation between the intimate connection with our pets, but not only that, what they give us as we give them in return. And I think, you know, in the past we've talked about relationship issues, marital issues, love or being in love, the difference. But the second thing that I came across that I thought was soul searching was the fact that they don't judge you. Dogs or cats or birds, it says they'll eat your leftovers, your cold pizza, your breakfast. You could take forever to acknowledge them. They sit around all Saturday with you in your pajamas as you watch Netflix instead of mowing the lawn. And he said, and the animals don't look at you with that dirty look. Maybe like the wife might, you know, "Hey, how come you ain't on the Honeydew Ranch?" They don't judge you. And so the simple question might be, could we get a little bit of that in our human relations? You know, have we ever worked for a boss that we've made a nonsensical mistake? And they say, "You know what? That's okay. You do great work. And let's just overlook it." You know, how wonderful we feel when someone or our spouse, you know, we burn the chicken, or and they said, "Okay, that's okay, honey. You know, boy, you made a great meal, and I enjoyed it anyway." You know, they don't judge, and I think that's aside from unconditional love, which is number one on almost every bulletin that I looked up about this. But number two was that they don't judge you. Could we take away from that as well? They don't judge us, you know.
Right.
Their unconditional love is based on the fact that, you know, come as you are. You know, you're late. You know, you've come in. You know, typically you come home at 6, but this particular time you stopped off, got something to eat, went to the movies. You came home 10, 11 o'clock at night. They don't judge you, like, where you been, and I'm not going to talk to you. You know, they're non-judging.
Yeah, they can do that. They don't, because they could do that without expressing themselves verbally. Because how many times have we done that without expressing ourselves verbally, but we still got a message across, right?
Mm-hmm.
Many times we just pout. We just pout and just turn away from each other and just go somewhere. Don't say a thing. But it's how you're acting that you're really saying a whole lot without saying one word. Well, animals could do that too, but they don't. don't.
They're highly adaptive. They're highly adaptive to the circumstance. Usually, like, you know, we've recently got a little chihuahua, and, you know, sometimes the wife and I will go out on the strip, have a nice time, come home late, and he's just so happy to see us. His whole body language is like he just can't wait to be in our arms and sit in the middle
like
Wednesday
party
between us. Yeah, he loves it. So, and it's endearing when they're reciprocal. So I think, too, in terms of a parallel advantage to that expression is, could we take away a little bit of that as well? You know, to be adaptive in our relationships. Like we used to say years ago, "Hey, you know what? That was really skin off my back. you know, I can overlook it. I can, as God's word would say, to look over one's transgression. You know, that's in the good book, but do we do that? Do we overlook someone's imperfections and not expect perfection? Animals do that inherently. They just do.
You know,
they're adaptive. They're adaptive, yes.
And I think that I think also it's important for us to recognize it and just recognize it. Like I always say, pay attention. Pay attention, because what he or she or, you know, your cat, your dog, your horse, whatever they may have, it may be there for a reason. And if you believe in God, there's no such thing as a coincidence. It happens for a reason. So if something is there for a reason, you need to pay attention to it and say, well, hey, maybe I can learn from this. Because as a songwriter, I listen to everything people say, even children, because they say some of the darnest things. You go, whoa, I could use that. That could be a song right there. You know, so I listen to everybody. And so we need to try to maybe pay a little bit more attention to how these animals, I believe that these animals are on this earth to teach us something. They're not just here for us to use them. They're here to teach us.
Oh, absolutely. That's a great point, because I think that I've said that all the time. You know, how many times I've looked at a bird, an owl, a cat, the majestic mannerism of, like this chihuahua, he's very little, but when he takes his stance with his ears sticking up like a Doberman pincher, I see the majestic royalty within his body language. And he's always ready to play. He's always ready to be forgiving. He's always ready to eat and to, you know, but he doesn't ask for something. You know, I think sometimes, you know, the expression goes, you always hurt the ones you love. And I think sometimes we have a certain expectancy from our loved ones where our pets don't. They just love us irregardless of the fact. They don't care what we're wearing. They don't care if we have makeup on or if we have a new pair of clothes. They could care less if we're in our birthday suit. They could care less. Not judgmental, and they don't expect anything but love from us. That's it. That's a lesson.
It is. And I believe also that, you know, people are, you know, these animals, what they do to us, and do for us, is so underrated. It's so underrated. It's just a dog. It's just a cat. Who cares? You know, my friend said, you know, her house caught on fire. And she lost two of her cats in the house fire. And she said her son, you know, called her a grown man. Son called her, you know, 6 months later and said, Mom, I am still hurting over the fact that the cat died. She says, that's okay. That's what love does. You love those cats, and they loved you. And so when you pull that element away, you feel it. It's gone. That love that you had with that particular animal is gone.
And here's something.
Go ahead.
No. I'm just excited about what you're talking about. You know, here's something that when I read generically, that it took me a minute for it to sink in. It simply says they hear way better than we do. Okay, so anatomically, they have the ears to hear. You know, certain dog whistles go above and beyond the frequencies that our human ears are capable of hearing. So that's just academic, okay? But when you think about it, when I was a kid, my mother would say, you have two ears and one mouth. So do twice as much listening as you do speaking. And so when I read it, once I got That's into good. The interior, you know, my dog Tyson, he's this little chihuahua, beautiful black and white chihuahua. When my wife comes home, she has a little sports car, and he can be in the backyard. The moment he hears that engine come down the street from the front, he's completely tuned in, and he's patiently waiting. And so it underscores the point that he's listening out for her.
Yes.
He's keenly
yes.
anticipating. And
yes.
so once again, in parallel, could we do twice as much listening as we do speaking? Sometimes we jump the gun. But can we learn from our little furry friends to really listen, to tune in to our loved ones?
Right.
Maybe when your wife comes home, she puts her pocketbook on the glass table and it makes a certain sound. The keys hit the wooden chair. You know, the
yeah.
refrigerator opens up or the faucet or she uses the facility. Could we tune in? And then when we tune in, could we reciprocate? Maybe we're in a colder climate. You know, maybe our dear friends in London, could we put on a spot of tea? Because we're listening. We're looking for those
right.
little nuances. These are the things that, like you mentioned, we could take for granted that our little furry friends are, like I know you have horses, our big furry friends. I'm sure when you come into the barn, you know, they're on a congratulatory mode. You know, they're like, hey, friend, got some hay? They're there for you. They're
Sweet.
Listening.
Yes. Yeah, speaking of hay, right?
what's going on?
I just had an intimate experience with one of my horses. When I got here, I pulled up to the gate, and he decided that he's the biggest horse that I have. He decided to come over to the gate, and I never want him to come over to the gate because I don't want him to get out into the road. And so I jumped out the car and told Gayla, get behind the wheel. I got to get this boy. And so I went up, I got out, and I went over to him, and I know what he likes. And he just stopped. And he's huge, dude. He's heavy. When they run, the earth shakes. It's
wow.
like, ooh, what is that? It's like, look, they are heavy. And so this big, giant, he is so gentle with me. And he comes up and he puts his head down in front of me. And then I rub his ears. And I rub his head and I rub his, you know, and his head. And I keep him, he just stays there. He don't move or anything. And she drives through and then I go, okay, Sax, stay right there. And I go close the gate. And then, so what happened is that I told Gayla to park inside the gate because the horses would chew on the car. They like the paint. They chew on the paint on the car, man.
They chew
and so,
paint? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, they crazy. I'm like, dude, you know how much that could cost? And so we can't stay in, you know, the cars can't be around the horses. So we put it in there. And so then as she was putting it in there, and the stack started following me because he wanted some more attention. So I went on the other side of the gate, and then he was right there, and he just put his head over the fence, and then I noticed that he had stuff in his eyes. So I started cleaning his eyes, and I was thinking, you know, is that good? I was thinking, you're a big baby. You're my big baby. But that right there is so intimate, you know, between me, this little man, and this giant creature that needed my attention, and he let me know.
But yet he shows acute sensitivity. And so sometimes, right, we can
right.
be intimidating by our size or our demeanor, our stature,
right.
our intelligence.
Right.
But can
right.
we be approachable? Can we be sensitive to the needs of others? And so, you know, that was my constant takeaway, looking at the parallel between animals, our intimate connection with animals, but even more so far-reaching, how it changes us. You know, do we allow, like you said, this monstrous horse to change us? You know, I believe that's God's plan. You know, I've had huge dogs, Neil Masters, I currently have a little Chihuahua. And from the first day, you know, there was 30 dogs in the pound yapping and screaming and barking. It was kind of annoying. But this little dog just looked at me, and his stance, his ears pointed like a Doberman, and we just connected. And I kept telling the wife, I said, babe, look at this one, look at this one. We were just vibing. And he's right now, he's laying on his back, legs wide open, and I'm stroking his little, you know, breast, and he's just loving it. But he changed me. You know, he neutralized some of my angst, my aggressions, my frustrations because of the way that – huh?
Yeah, go ahead. You're about to say it. I was wondering how did he change you?
I think because, you know, animals operate on different frequencies. I think that they can my wife and I were talking about how these animals these days can come into a hospital, and they can walk up to the ones that have a tumor. How do they know? It's got to be something electric that they feel that transmits from their body. You know, they say we're electric. And animals have, like, they can sniff out drugs. You know, they can tell if somebody's, you know, up to no good. You know, my wife said telekinesis. It's interesting that we walked the dog about a week ago, and he had no problem when certain people walked past him. But then there was another gentleman that was walking with a younger person. He immediately started barking. What was it about those individuals that he sensed were not quite cool? So
yeah.
they have a better, I think, a better litmus test sometimes than we do to differentiate,
yeah.
Even like your horse. I know horses, if they don't bow their head down and they keep their head up, they're not feeling you. There's something about you stands out. Yeah, if they get into attack mode or they get into a defensive mode, you know, Cesar Millan, you know, the dog whisperer always talks about that. You know, are they in ready mode? You know, are they wagging their tail? Does the tail get stiff? Do their eyes, you know, do they jump in a fixation mode?
Yeah.
There's something about you that's either lacking or needs adjustment. And do we allow that animal to fix us? Maybe they're feeling our aggression. Maybe not only do we translate that to our loved ones, maybe we're that disagreeable person at our job that nobody seems to get along with. Nobody wants to take out the lunch. Because there's something about your energy that people don't like. Animals are great litmus tests for fixing that. And I think that's one of the reasons that we have a tendency to be allured to them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Now, I just wanted to, you know, give people another example of what you just said in terms of, you know, walking into a hospital and picking out the people with cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So I bought a dog. She's a sheepadoodle. Her name is Chelsea.
Sheepadoodle.
Yeah, she's a sheep dog and poodle. They call them sheep and poodle, right?
Sheep
and
poodle.
So she is just you know, that's my girl. We're very, very close, and she's very protective over me. She's always with me. She loves my wife. Trust me, she loves my wife desperately. But she, you know, and I have a direct connect, and it might be a boy girl thing. You know, it might be because, you know, how daughters are with their dads and sons are with their mother. I don't know. I haven't figured it out yet. All I know is that I enjoy it. I love that she loves me that much, right? And so, but anyway, so we, my wife, you know, started having a problem with her right temporal lobe in her brain. And so we were going back and forth to the doctors constantly to try to figure out, well, what's happening. You know, we couldn't, you know, it's causing her some issues. And so finally, you know, I made the doctors, because they kept on saying it was stuff that she knew it wasn't, because she's a psychologist. They were saying it was like this, or it was anxiety. They're trying to basically put it on that. You know, a lot of people have anxieties. You've worked all these years, and, you know, it's just, you kind of burnt out, or whatever the case is. So she I said, I need you to put her in the hospital so you can see what I see. Can you do that?
Mm-hmm.
And so they made, they just like, okay, we'll do that. I don't think that'll help, but we'll do it. So they end up doing it, and we stayed in the hospital for 5 days straight. I stayed there with her, 5 days straight in the hospital, and they were able to see exactly what I was seeing. And so what they realized is that she was having seizures.
Wow.
From the right temporal lobe. And so they said, nope, we said we found the problem, and there's no problem. We can fix it. And so, and they did. But the thing is that they said that doctor, when the doctor found out that Chelsea, my dog, was able to tell that Gayla was going to have a seizure before Gayla knew she was going to have a seizure, he said, that is a service dog, and I'm signing the papers now, because that dog was able. How can they see? How can they sense that? Anytime my wife is about to have a seizure, the dog, she runs right up to her and put both of her paws on each one of her arms and look her in the face, just stare at her, because she knew something was happening to her body that was not normal.
Yeah.
It's a chemical or something, and so we were able to detect this stuff, and so. That's what, you know, what you're saying. They have this instinctive ability to be able to tell you something is happening and it's not normal. So we need to pay attention to our animals all the time, because cats are amazing too, and they may be trying to tell you something sometimes. So,
medicinally, they're being used, you know, instinctively within hospitals. But, you know, as I was listening to your story with your wife and thinking about all the amazing things that animals do, just like the creator, they say the quintessential thing that the creator of the universe has is the agape love, this love for us. And I think if I were able to use one word to describe what animals do in general and what they have personally affected me is loyalty. You know, there's nothing like the loyalty of an animal. You know, when they truly, like my wife, she has a bird. Sometimes we call it a devil bird. It's not right, but we call it a devil bird because she tries to attack me. But man, when my wife comes home, that bird instinctively knows that she's home. She hears the garage door open. And she could have been on her way to attack my big toe. She goes back to her retreated corner. It's almost as if she's a sweetheart all of a sudden. Because when my wife comes home, she kisses her. I mean, to see them, you're like, I can't believe it. It's like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. I can't believe how, and she adorned, you know, her eyes are narrowing, you know, loving.
My God.
But when as soon as she knows her mom, the boss, is left, she's like running towards my big toe to like squeeze it within her mandibles until I scream bloody murder. And I said to myself, this bird, you know, and birds particularly are known to be one animal owners. I mean, they, you know, if they love the wife, they don't love the husband. It's just their exclusivity is strictly to that one owner, you know. And my dog is this way now.
Oh, yeah. Just like Chelsea, yeah. Yeah, I know you told me, and I was like, oh, okay, yeah, that's how Chelsea is with me. Even though she loves my wife, and she's very protective over her, but she's my girl. She won't go to bed until I go to bed.
The other day I had to tap her on her nose because she pooped in the sunken living room, which is really our exclusive sanctuary. That's the only place we come in. We take our shoes off before we go to the lower level. It's real zen. And my wife is Asian, so it's real zen. Very tranquil, you know, beautiful colors of jade and emerald green and cream with a dark mahogany wood. It's just everyone that comes here that says, oh, my God, it's so serene. So we take our shoes off and we come down into this area. Well, he pooped over here twice. And the recommendation was to bring him over to the area that he pooped, show him the area, remove the fecal matter, take it outside to an appropriate place that you want him to. And I did so. And ultimately, he hasn't done it since. It's almost saying that this is inappropriate, and this is where I want you to poop. But he kind of stayed away from me, you know, for the rest of the day because he knew I was disenchanted in terms of what he did. So when I got done, I put him in his little crate. And when the wife came home, he begged to come out. He went upstairs, watched this show my wife likes to watch called Manifest. She's binging off of it. So she watches
the
dog.
Same here.
She watches the show. And then about an hour or so into it, my dog decided that he was going to come in the room to go see me. Came up to my face, and then he burrowed himself under the covers. So, of course, she came in to get the dog because she didn't want the dog to awaken me. Well, too late. I was already up. But the point was, he did not want her to come near him. It was almost as if I'm making friends again with my owner and don't disturb this bonding groove with my master. And it was really hilarious. But as much as I was disenchanted as him pooping in the living room, I felt him. It was so apologetic. His movement was very sincere, very deliberate. And it made me feel warm and fuzzy. I said, you know, I love this little dog. He's really going out of his way to make amends. And once again, you know, my caveat to that is, can we do that a little bit more? Can we be forgiving? Can we be truly apologetic? Not saying, I'm sorry, but remember what you did. No. Hey, I'm really sorry, and I really want to make amends. And whatever I've done, can I possibly rectify it, you know, with my body language, with my touch, with my actions that hopefully speak louder than words. He was hitting on all cylinders, and I couldn't help but be ingratiated by what he was bringing to the table, you know?
Yes, absolutely. Well, you know, it like you said, it's important that we learn from these beautiful creatures that God has given us to enjoy. But, you know, we need to pay attention just a little bit more about how loyal they are, how you know, the focus they are, how they pay attention to our needs. Like my dog, like you were saying, my dog knows she'll watch me. If I put on a pair of pants, we're ready to go somewhere. Her tail starts to go. She's like, we're getting out of the house. She's ready, you know. And it's just, that's because she pays attention. She gets used to my routine. And she goes, I know when he does that, that's what's going to happen. And so it makes it easy, our relationship easier, because now since she pays attention, she knows exactly what I want her to do. I'm going to take you outside, go to the bathroom, let you do your thing. She's happy, I'm happy, everybody's happy. And so I just wish that, like you said, that we as human beings could try to apply that in our relationships with each other as well. Not just not just back to the animals and try to get, but use that information, use those gifts. Those are gifts. And use those gifts.
And here's another one, you know, here's another one. You know, how often are we with our mates, our marriage mates, our loved ones, our family members, where we take a complainative position? You know, everything that they do, we put under a microscope. You know, the wife has made meatloaf three times in the same week or month. And, you know, I just don't like meatloaf. Man, why couldn't you have made hamburgers instead? You know, we get into this complainative mode. And even scripturally, the Creator does not like a complainative spirit. But in my research towards animals, one of the things that they highlighted was that you can feed them the same thing every meal, the same, like, you know, kibbles and bits.
And I know, I think about that too.
And guess what? They don't complain. Right. They don't say, you know what? I need you to change this, man, to NutriSystem or something. You know, they lap it up. You know, and I was thinking, could we do that a little bit more? Could we be less You know, nobody even likes a friend that complains all the time. Forget a loved one.
Yeah.
Critical, bro.
Yeah.
You know, our animals are very forgiving.
Yes.
Very forgiving.
You know.
And that's why we love them.
My dog, she does something else that makes me crazy. I think it's so beautiful, and it makes me crazy because, like, if I'm mad at her, if I yell at her or I swing at her because she did something, I swing, what the hell? And then she'll go down as low as she can, and she'll come to me, and she like saying, I am so sorry. I did not mean to make you that upset. And it breaks my heart because then I feel bad that I got so upset, right? Or if I'm in a cheer and I put the leg part down and she gets caught like her tail or something, if she gets hurt at all, she turns around and runs straight to me and say, "I'm so sorry. What did I do? She did nothing. I did it." And she's running to you so submissive, like, oh, my God, don't let anything come between us, kind of thing. I love you. I'm so sorry that that I did something to make you hurt me. Whoa. I feel so
And I know we touched upon this, but, you know, one of the other things of the 10 that I came across is that they can calm us down when we feel chaotic. And it talked about, you know, people in general can be exhausting at our work, school, family. Just being around them sometimes can leave you feeling anxious, annoyed, exhausted. But it goes on to talk about that just the very presence of our loved animal can have a calming effect on our psyche. And it's, you know, in this increasingly chaotic and uncertain world, I mean, just the pandemic alone has caused irreparable damage with people today. People are, you know, we just don't know what's coming down the pipe next. And when we close the doors to all those germs and interference and imperfections, and there's our loved animal that's right there to greet us, right there to show us love. You know, this little guy, he gets on his hind legs, which I like. He doesn't jump on me, but he prances on his hind legs, and he paddles his feet, and he looks like he's smiling. And it's like, hey, Phoenix, I love you. You're home. Oh, glad to see you. And you're like, suddenly, nothing else really matters. And you're stooping down even though your back hurts. You know, your knees are popping. Your ankles are cracking.
And you're stooping
down to show this animal that you are in tune and that you're happy to see him too. And, man, I believe that, for me personally, my faith, that's godsend because I don't know anything else that makes me feel like that.
Yeah.
I think even with my wife, and I love her, trust me, more than I've ever loved a woman before in my entire life. I told her, I said, anything happens to us, I'll never love this way again. Sounds like a song, right? I know I'll never love that. Dionne Warwick. You know, she'll kiss me once, twice, and if the good Lord permits, I might get that third little peck, and that's about as good as it gets.
Right.
But this little guy, it's nonstop. It's like he doesn't get tired of the love. You know, he doesn't have a. You ever like shake somebody's hand and it's like 1,000, 2,000, okay, let go. But if they're like 1,000, 2,000, 15,000, 21,000, you're like, could you get off my hand already? Or you hug somebody. It could even be at a funeral, a dear loved one. And you're like, you hug them. Right. Oh, Aunt so-and-so, oh, Uncle so-and-so. And it's like two pats, three pats. All right, we're into the fourth pat. Release me. Let me go. I think Steinfeld did a whole episode on timing of a hug or a handshake. I mean, you could go above and beyond, and then the person is clingy. But we don't do that with our animals. That dog can hug us until the next morning. We don't get enough.
Yeah.
You know. So can we take away? Can we let our guards down just a little bit? Not be so uptight. In other words, you know.
Right, to our human counterparts. You know, it's I have three cats as well, and they're outside cats. The dogs are inside, the cats are outside. And I bring the cats in like if it's raining or thunderstorm or too cold or too hot. I bring them and they have their own room that they go into. But for the most part, their whole purpose is to keep, you know, snakes and rodents and all kind of stuff because we live on a farm. So, but this one particular cat, he's gigantic. He's one of the biggest cats I ever had. But what I love about all is, well, the big cat, it's just amazing when I hold him. He's so big. He don't let anyone else pick him up because he's so big. The girls, they have a difficult time, so he's uncomfortable because they're having a difficult time. And so when I pick him up and I put him in my arms, and I might sit him on my lap while I'm holding him in my arms, he takes his head and his head's huge, and he tucks it in between my arm and my chest, and he just, like, it's like he just, like, want to be cuddled. But what happens is I get a sense of peace and calmness and relax in the storm, like, because this is a big ant. This cat's like a tomcat. People think he is a tomcat because he's so big. Wow. But with me, he's a gentle storm. He is so gentle and just like, you know, I love them because I feed them every day. They know I love them. Go ahead.
It's like you said, he can sense through your vibrational connection, your electric vibrations, that he is totally protected. He feels that even with babies, you ever see babies transfer from one person to the next and the baby starts to scream? You know, how would you feel if somebody picked you up and you felt like any minute you were going to fall to the floor, as opposed to a bodybuilder dude picks you up and you feel like, wow, you know what? He's got this Superman dude. You know, I broke my leg, but I'm not going nowhere. And animals can sense that. Babies can sense that, the stability that you bring to him. You know, I know my dog does the same thing. He takes his nose and he burrows it under between my armpit and my chest. And sometimes he'll take his snoot and burrow it in between the palm of my hand. Because he feels comforted, you know, what a connection that is, you know, it's a beautiful thing.
I hear you. Well, I want to read something to you from one of the listeners. Are people just compensating by lavishing love onto a pet?
Absolutely. The simple answer to that is absolutely, but I think the discussion here is, why do they feel that way? Is there something lacking, which is why I try to constantly draw a parallel between what we need and what we're giving? Is it reciprocal? Because sometimes the things that we're lacking in a relationship is because we're not giving. It takes two. And yes.
Yeah.
Many times, often, people who have this deficiency, sometimes, not always, they give all of that to that cat or dog or bird or horse, but in the same token, they're not willing. They're more rigid when it comes to human connection. They don't let their hair down. And that's why I felt, you know, the spirit in me to constantly draw the parallel. Can we learn from these animals and the relationship that we so lovingly, supportively give them? And could that permeate or translate into other aspects of our lives? And it doesn't have to be a loved one. It could be on the job. Maybe there's a coworker that just kind of rubs you the wrong. You just don't like the way they look. You don't like the – maybe she has blue hair and you're conservative and you think everybody should have natural colors. And so you're distanced from this, but yet you'll take an exotic toucan or a pelican or a bird that's got 20 colors, and you're more accepting. And so my thing is, Could you be a little bit more flexible and less compensating towards maybe an animal that doesn't express it in human ways, but yet there's
right.
a lesson, like you said, for you to permeate in the other aspects of your life. So, yes, I do believe that sometimes we accept animals because they're a substitute for something that's lacking in us. That's the connection.
Oh, okay. Well, I got to say that it really, I hope that we can learn from these animals. How beautiful is it that they just give us love and they don't even know us. They come into our home and all they want is love, but they give it. So this is the thing, you said it earlier. What we may be lacking is what we're not doing. If you want something, you need to give it. I told you, a friend of mine said, this girl is going to be this, and I'm going to find me a fine girl that's in shape and is Christian and all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, dude, so if you're going to do that, are you going to be that for her too? I mean, you can't, like, you're like saying, this is what I want, but you're not going to, if you're not going to deliver those kind of goods to somebody, you know, I think you got to be careful. If you want a good person, then make sure you're a good person. You know, if you want somebody who's very loving and affectionate, you need to be loving and affectionate.
Remember the moments they say, I found love on a two-way street. You know,
yeah.
You have to be able to, like you say, give if you want to receive. It can't be, I think sometimes, you know, we all are guilty of the wish list. We have this punch list, and that's what we want. You know, we want the woman to be in shape, but we look like we're 10 months pregnant about to give birth to a bouncing baby elephant. You know, you can't do that. You know, we want our wives to look good, but, you know, like I tell my wife before she comes home, I do this thing, man. I check myself twice, and I go in the bathroom, spray a little water in my hair, and make sure everything is brushed down, you know, like Elvis. Because I know she's been at work all day. Last thing she wants to do is come home and I'm looking like a crab apple. You know what I mean? Totally uninteresting.
Mm-hmm.
Very important.
So my wife does this to me. So, and I get frustrated with it. So, but now I just learned something. So every time we go and take pictures, she goes, "Oh, take your glasses off." And I go, "Oh, come on. Take them off. I'm telling you. You look 10 years younger." And I go, "Oh, so that's what you want. Somebody give me it." So what if do animals don't do that?
they love you just
down.
The way you are.
They love you
that's
just
another
the way
song.
You are.
I love you just the way you are.
Bruno Mars. So so this is the thing. Now I've learned that if she says, if that makes her happy, if it makes her feel good, right, then I'll just take the glasses off. And then maybe eventually, with saying nothing, and then maybe eventually she won't even ask me to take the glasses off because she's like, well, because maybe she'll start treating me the way that I'm treating her. If I'm treating her, oh, sure, respectful and kind and loving, then maybe she'll probably feel bad if I and if she won't ask you to do it anymore, I kick your glasses. Who cares? As long as it's you. That's all that matters. But anyway, I have one more last question before I let you go. The question is it a cultural thing to love our pets as we do? Is it a cultural thing to love our pets as we do?
I think it can be. You know, that's open. There's a lot of latitude there. I think that's an open discussion within itself. But absolutely. I mean, depending on the upbringing. That depending upon your social economic status, you know, someone from the country that's open to the wild, blue yonder, and the animals, like you say, you have cats that never come in the house. You know, certain cultures, man, you bring a dog or cat in the house, man, my grandmother,
oh, yeah,
loose her mind. Animals belong outside in God's country. But maybe you live in Manhattan in a one-bedroom apartment, and you have a Great Dane in there that's bigger than you, and he sleeps in the main bedroom, and you sleep on the couch. But that's a cultural thing, you know. That's a cultural thing. That's some, you know, we learn to adapt and accept, you know, whatever our current circumstances are, and without question, that translates to our animals. You know, mm-hmm. So yes, you know, there are certain cultures where, you know, it's frowned upon, and then there's certain cultures where that's just a lifestyle. You know, I'm sure, in like they say in your neck of the woods, Wardell, you know, horses and chickens and cows and mules and all of these things, that's a cultural thing. You know, in the land of Texas, I mean, it's like, what do you mean you don't have four calves and two cows and you know, a dog that jumps over the moon? Like, why not? In the city, you have a what? A horse, you know, culturally, yeah. Absolutely.
Yes, absolutely.
I want to conclude and say, don't judge a person because they don't do what you do. You know, my wife is of a different culture than I, and I have to constantly acquiesce and say to myself, I found out that her 87-year-old mother is worse than she is when it comes to animals. My wife is like Dr. Doolittle. And so, you know, she believes she can talk to the animals, and they talk to her, and I'm like, really?
Go, girl.
But I've learned a lot from her. Yeah, I've learned a lot, there's no doubt.
That's good. All right, cool. Well, you know, in closing, we got a few minutes in closing and stuff, and I was just wondering, you know, is there anything that you would like to say in closing in regards to this? I really, first of all, I got to tell you, I really enjoyed this conversation. It really makes me feel good to talk about these amazing animals and how they have blessed me in my life. And so thanks for giving me that opportunity. But is there anything that's on your heart that you might want to share?
Sure. I would say we're living in, as the scripture says, critical times, hard to deal with, post-COVID or whatever you want to call it. We have an acute sensitivity now for things in which we're lacking, things that we want. We've been separated from family members. We've conducted funerals and weddings via Zoom. Go and adopt a pet. There's so many pets out there that need your loving care. And we know that the Creator will smile upon you because they're all God's creatures. And there's a gift within that creature for you personally. Go take your time. Go to some of these shelters that are really overwrought with pets. We've gone to a few over the weekend, and oh my God, I saw an inordinate amount of pit bulls. And my heart went out to them because so many people think that they're such dangerous animals. They were some of the most loving. And so adopt a pet. Find one that enmeshes with your spirit. Take them home. Learn from them. You know, many cultures have studied praying mantis, cranes, birds, cat styles, and they've adopted complete sciences based on our airplanes, based on the albatross. I mean, so go learn from these furry friends and creatures. There's so many gifts to unearth between them. You know, we're all about empowering ourselves and becoming better versions of ourselves. Go out there and explore that. Let's get connected once again. Let's learn from them and make this earth a better place because of it. Absolutely.
Amen. I love it. I love it, man. Let's do that. Let's listen to those words of wisdom right there. Thank you again, my brother Phoenix. Appreciate you, man. And I look forward to hanging out someday.
Absolutely, man.
And
absolutely. Enjoyed it.
God bless you, man. Okay.
And thank the audience for their great questions. Always, they're always thought provoking.
Yes, they're awesome like that. And so, I'll talk to you soon, man. And you take care, all right? God bless you.
You too. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Okay, brother. See you guys.
Bye-bye.
Nobody come close to me and you together. Step under my umbrella, we'll make it through any weather. Except when I make it storm, sex in the greatest form. Then hibernate under my body, and yep, I keep you warm. But in a chinchilla, you know I beat it up like the Thriller in Manila. Flying my private jet to villas in Anguilla. Just throw you on the grill, that's 'cause 7 days a week you're my 5-course meal for real.
Great conversation. I gotta tell you, it was really good for me to talk about what we talked about. It really blessed my heart because the love of those little creatures is so powerful. And like I said, they underestimated what they're here for. Hey, listen, I heard some noise in the background. Is that you, Mr. Fleming?
it's me. It's me. What's going on?
How you doing, Don? How's it going, brother?
I'm good, man. How's everything with you?
Oh, I'm just ready to mix it up a little bit. That's all. I just had a great conversation with Phoenix, and now ready to get mixed it up with you here on Soul Light Records Radio.
Well, all right. Let's do it.
All right. Well, let's get going. I'm going to take y'all back. And then Don's going to hit you right after that. So here we go. A little feeling. Oh, shit.
Thank you. make it right. I want you all, I want you all, I want you all tonight. Yeah, I want you all, I want you all, I want you all tonight. Make it right, make it right, make it right, make it right. Yeah.
I want you.
Keeping me, I don't understand what you do, what you do, what you do, what you do.
I want you.
Wow, we're not letting you off the dance.
Mixing it up. You were mixing it up. You were jamming, man. That is, of course, the late, great Curtis Harrison. Of course, Curtis Harrison was a part of the BB&Q band. He had a nice little solo project in 1983 called I Want You All Tonight. Thanks for hooking that up, Wardell. That's the jam right there.
Well, you know, I do what I can. I'm trying to hang with you, man. So, and before that, you had Alexander O'Neill. Tell us about that.
Yes, from the Hearsay album, What Can I Say to Make You Love Me, from 1987. That is, of course, produced by Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis. They were all over the place back then, but definitely, of course, amongst you and Leon and Dana and all them other cats, you know, just making great songs, and Ricky Freeze, and just a plethora of production gurus out there, man, including yourself. I did mention you before, but I'm mentioning you again. But yeah, that is classic from the Hearsay album, What Can I Say to Make You Love Me, by Mr. Alexander O'Neill. Of course, it started off the block. Billy Ocean, from the License to Drive soundtrack, of course, Get Out of My Dreams and Into My Car. Oh, man, you can't go wrong with Billy Ocean, man.
Yeah, that dude, boy, when he came out, he was just hitting it hard. It's like, whoa, who is this guy? And he just kept on coming with those big pop R&B hits. Yeah, he was just hitting it.
Yes.
Man. Everybody was loving
yes.
that. Yes. I was like, man. So, does he still do concerts?
Yeah, he's still performing. He's gray all over now. He's got like these big thick dreadlocks and a big big white dreadlocks, big white goatee. I mean, he's still out there. And he's still out there making music, and he sounds the same, man. He's about what, 70 years old now, doing what he does. Still kicking it. Still singing Caribbean Queen.
That's right. Don't you know, how does that song go? Sing it for us, Don, just a little bit.
Oh, come on now. I know I like that. I can't sing like you, Cordell. So I'm gonna have to defer the singing.
Yeah, you probably sing like me. That's why you got to defer it.
Oh, man.
Well, anyway, man, so once you kick us off, the next block.
Man, you know what?
Right?
Since you are in my library, so shout out to Wardell being in my music library, man. I want to take you back a classic of mine, one of my all-time favorite songs. This is music from Bernard Wright from 1985. It's called Who Do You Love? You guys keep it locked. We're mixing it up today on Solar Records Radio. Keep it locked right here.
All right.
I
Change. I love the fact that, you know, of course, that is another Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis song.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Wow. So did they
another produce
new
song by them? Yeah.
Okay. Mm. Wow, that's great. I'm so those guys they surprise you. They every time I turn around, they have something else that they did. Something else they did. You just never know.
Yes,
right?
Indeed.
Start doing your
research. I know.
So,
I know.
So anyway, I just want to thank everybody again. We got about another 19 minutes. You can still play some more music and stuff. But you know, I'm just so grateful for, you know, good conversation earlier part of the show with Phoenix. I appreciate that, my brother Phoenix, and you know, appreciate just that thing that happens between, you know, that relationship. Yeah. And it's real. And if we could just apply that same kind of love to each other, it would be a wonderful world. And we could just be, you know, just love each other. You know, I know it's difficult to have unconditional love for strangers, but, you know, just the love of God, you know, love people through God. I mean, just at about 4 o'clock this morning, I was awakened by my spirit. And God told me, you need to go to the hospital and pray over your brother who is dying. You need to go. And so when I woke up this morning, I called his wife and I said, you think I could go to the hospital and pray over your husband? And she says, really? I said, well, yeah, you know, I'm a chaplain. And she said, oh, yeah, they'll let you in as a chaplain. And I said, okay. She says, let me check. So she did. She checked. And then she called me back and said, yes. They said, you can come. And so they're going to call you and set it up. And yeah, so I did. They called and I went. And I just prayed over my brother. And this brother that I prayed over was a man that I argued with, that I had disagreements with, you know. And you know, we you know, it's like, and we're arguing about stupid stuff, you know, like when I'm talking about politics and that kind of stuff. It's just stupid. And so, but I wasn't arguing. He was just so frustrated that I didn't agree with what he was saying. And so he's so frustrated. And now he's in the hospital dying. And I'm like, you know what? The heck with all that stuff. What? There's nothing more important than you. All that other stuff, you know, whatever. We're entitled to different opinions, but we need to love each other. And we need to be there for each other when, you know, if we can. And so it was just a blessing for me to go down there and pray over him and talk to him and encourage him to fight from the inside, as we are all fighting from the outside, you know, for him. But in the inside, it's him and the Lord. And he got to work. He got to come on. You got to fight it, man. You know, a lot of times we get tired. And so he's been in the hospital for 2 weeks on a ventilator. He's tired. And I know he is. And I said, but you know what? That's exactly what happens in a race. You know, you're running and you're tired. This thing is taking too long. I'm tired. I just want to stop and the pain to be over. Well, but you can't stop. And most of the time, if we just keep on going, we just keep on going. Before you know it, that second wind kicks in. And when that second wind kicks in, whoa, you just start taking off. There's no more pain anymore. You're running. You feel so much better when you get to that part of the second wind. And I said, you're there now. I said, you're getting ready to get your second win. So you and the Holy Spirit, let's go. Fight from the inside. And so I just pray that he got the message and that he will fight from the inside and that he will come, you know, get himself together. So I just was saying that, you know, there's things that what I learned about these animals, that they're unconditional. It is love us unconditionally. And if we could learn to love each other unconditionally, it would be a better world instead of always judging each other and beating each other up. And, you know, I don't like him. I don't like her. Just keep that to yourself. Who cares? You know, wash it. You know, get rid of it, whatever. But anyway, man, I know I had a lot to say right there. Sorry, guys. I just, you know, hopefully someone needed to hear that. And like Don always says, so I just pray that, you know, that it, because I, you know, sometimes my wife will say stuff to me and my response is wrong. It's wrong. And I had to learn how to be patient within it, you know, be patient in the storm, you know, so that you can make the right move so you're not, so later you're not upset with yourself for acting stupid or saying the wrong thing, you know. And so, but anyway, I'm going to stop venting and talk about myself. So I want to play another song for you guys. This is a new song. And so this is a song that was suggested. And so here we go on Solar Records Radio. This is Let That Heart.
going to a show tonight. They're working hard, 9 to 5. Not talking about the movie, no. All of Broadway play, this show is live.
That is so good.
Yes. 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 Cheryl Yes. Lynn, man. Encore. Oh, my goodness. She is got a little freak in her. Because that song is, that song, that's the beauty of those songs back in the day. The subtle, it was the subtleness, the subtlety of it, you know. But encore, of course, she said, hey, man, you were so good to me. We had a great time last night. It deserved an encore. That's basically what the song is about. So,
Oh, Lord, have mercy. We better stop while we're here. Anyway.
I know, right?
Thanks. Don't forget, Kimberly has her wooden handle. A wooden stick. So, anyway. God bless all you guys. Thanks again, Greg. Thank you for your amazing flyers that you continue to build, man. Mate, thank you, brother. We love you and appreciate you and all the stuff that you do for us here at Solar Records Radio. Thank you, Astrid. I know you're asleep now. She works. She goes to work again. So she has to be so early to be at work at 7 in the morning. So she does the first half, and then she tries to do second half, but I know she falls asleep. She might still be up, but anyway, thank you, Astrid. We love you. And Don, thank you. Phoenix, thank you. And to all of our friends around the world, you guys are amazing, and we appreciate you. And thank you for the gift of you and spending time
great
with
music selection,
for,
too.
Yeah,
you were on. You were on fire today.
No, you were on fire.
I didn't work anything. You control
I'm
the board.
Yeah. All right. You could try that one, but you know, John's behind the scenes telling me what to do, just like Greg behind the scenes always.
No,
that's how they do it.
But no. On behalf of the show and Wardell and myself, again, thank you so much for tuning in and hanging out with us on this Tuesday. We will see you guys tomorrow from 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Of course, it is Indie Jazz Wednesday, so make sure. Do we have a guest?
Yes, we'll tell you about it later. Talk to you later. I'll post it. Love you. Good night. God bless. And Greg,
good night, guys.
You know what that guess is. Greg Jones.
If you leave me, I'll never.